Welcome to DG Frontiers. This is a collaboration with Australia-Vietnam Leadership Dialogue. So we're going to explore the dynamic digital landscape of Vietnam and Australia. Hello and welcome to DG Frontiers, a new podcast series under Business Insight on Viet Success. I'm Quoc Khánh, your host. And this is a collaboration with Australia-Vietnam Leadership Dialogue. In this series, we're going to explore the dynamic digital landscape of Vietnam and Australia by talking to prominent leaders and experts from various sectors. We're going to dive into stories, trends, what's going on in these two digital economies, and look forward to any potential collaborations that could shape the future of technological innovation of Vietnam and Australia. And today, we are privileged to welcome a Vietnamese entrepreneur who was born in Brisbane, Australia. He is the co-founder of GoOne, an edutech unicorn with a valuation of over $2 billion. GoOne is building a platform that provides education and skill solutions for many enterprises. It recently raised another $100 million in 2022 before acquiring the famous German learning apps Blinkist this year. So please join me to welcome Mr. Vũ Trần, calling from Brisbane, Australia, the co-founder of GoOne today. Hello, Vũ. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hello, Quoc. Thank you very much for having me today.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a privilege to be able to join you on such a great show and I guess to be able to be part of this all.
Did you have a chance to be back in Vietnam recently?
I haven't had a chance to travel to Vietnam in quite a while, I'm ashamed to say, but I'm really looking forward to being able to come back, to be able to visit and to be able to see people. And I guess to see how much change has occurred in the period of time since, you know, I haven't traveled to Vietnam since before COVID. That's how challenging it's been to be able to get out and about.
When was the last time that you've been back here?
Probably about 2018, 2017. So it's been quite a while. Considering we have a good-sized office in Vietnam, it's been quite challenging. We've had COVID. I've also got two young children. So trying to find the time to travel internationally is also a challenge these days as well.
Definitely. Well, congratulations on the success of GoOne. What a journey for you and your co-founders. I read on the internet that you guys are buddies at school, four close friends with different backgrounds, diverse background, and you are a medical doctor by train. And now you guys have a startup, a unicorn, with a valuation of over $2 billion. Tell me, how did it happen?
I always like to tell people that I have the best job in the world. And the reason why I have the best job in the world is I got to start GoOne with my best friends. Chris and Andrew, who are co-CEOs, I went to high school with. So, you know, when people look at GoOne, they think that we started in 2014, 2015, when we went through Y Combinator, which is an accelerator in the United States. But we started our first business when we were in year 11 at high school. That was 17 years ago, Quoc. So people think about GoOne and they don't realize that we are actually a 17-year founding story, right? Wow. So a lot of effort, a lot of learning, a lot of challenges, but so many cool things, so many great things that we've done. And to be able to do that with your best friends is incredibly enjoyable. It's something that I feel very lucky to have done. It hasn't been easy, but I love the people that I get to do it with.
Wonderful. So for those who haven't been familiar with GoOne, could you tell us exactly about what you are doing, what kind of product it is?
Yeah, so I'll give you the typical startup pitch. The best way to think about GoOne is as the Spotify or Netflix of workplace learning. So we sell online training and learning to workplaces all over the world. I think the statistic is something like every 1.3 seconds, someone in the world is doing training via GoOne, learning something via GoOne. So, Quoc, in the time that you and I will be talking today, we'll probably train a few thousand people, which is really, you know, to me is mind-boggling. In terms of what we do, we aggregate learning, on-demand learning. So from suppliers all over the world on every topic from Microsoft Excel through to communication skills, sales skills, through to, you know, programming and technical skills. What we do is we bring that all together into a single system, and then we plug that into whatever platform a customer is using to deploy their learning to their staff. So the idea for us is, how do we simplify and increase access to learning? Our mission as a company is to unlock positive potential in people through a love of learning. So my father, I'll give you this example, you know, my personal sort of experience. My father is one of the smartest people I'll ever get to know. He was grew up as a fisherman on Fukuak, but he never went to school beyond grade three. Beyond year three, that was the highest education that he got because he had to work. The difference between him and me is I got access to all the learning I could possibly imagine. You know, I was able to go to a very good school, go to a very good high school, go to a very good university, very different to what my father experienced. And so for us, where we focus on is, how do we increase access to learning? And the area that we focus on, a lot of the investment throughout the entire world is focused on the first 25 years of life. But what we do is, we want to focus on what happens when you enter the workforce, after you finish university, after you finish school. And that has been our focus, on helping companies upskill their staff.
So how is it different from other learning platforms such as like Coursera or Udemy or Masterclass?
Yeah, so I look at Coursera, Udemy, Masterclass, and their content is amazing. I have a lot of their content on my phone here at the moment, right? They are great content creators. They're fantastic at building engaging and wonderful content. Our job is to be able to make their content accessible in corporate and workplace learning platforms. Our job is to be able to take their content and make it available to the employees there. So in our world, what we do is, we allow our customers to manage one subscription to go one, to be able to access all the learning they need to be able to access. So that's where that aggregation piece is really important. If you think about Spotify, if you think about Netflix, if you think about Audible, it's about trying to give people to access to large volumes of learning and to be able to pursue what they need to be able to do, to be able to upskill in the areas that they're looking for.
So why don't companies or enterprises go directly to those platforms, but they have to go one?
Well, so they do. And I think that's where the opportunity is for us. Having to manage 20, 30 different subscriptions versus having to manage one. You know, you and I are probably old enough to remember what it was like to go out and buy DVDs, right?
Right.
Now, with one single subscription, we can log on and access every DVD we've probably ever bought. And that's the difference. I think that's the sort of the trend and the change in technology that we're trying to capture. We're not trying to produce the learning. We're trying to increase access to it.
Okay. So you're not competitors, but you're more like a partners.
Yeah. Our goal is to partner with everyone, right? We want to be able to bring both sides of that marketplace together, the supply side when it comes to content providers, and the demand side when it comes to the businesses who are invested in upskilling and training their staff.
Right. So what seemed to be the biggest challenge in doing so, in connecting and aggregating those sources and connect people with matching the learner with the content providers?
So I think there's two things. Workforces are incredibly diverse, right? So let's forget regionality to start off with. Let's just think about different industries. So the first thing to understand is that you have some commonality between the different skills across different industries, but you also have some really big differences, blue collar versus white collar, small business versus enterprise. And so for us, understanding the needs of customers over time is incredibly important. I mentioned before the scale of what we do. We train tens of millions of people every single year on all sorts of different topics. What that data allows us to do today is to be able to match great training with great customers or great employees or great learners who want to learn. But when you start, the biggest challenge for us is that we don't have that diversity of content and we don't have that diversity of learner. So what we had to do was pick key areas to focus on and grow over time, right? So for us, at the size and scale we're at the moment, it's a lot easier. But to get that initial sort of to overcome the cold start problem for us, it was about trying to find the niche areas for us to focus on. So an area that we focused on a lot early were things like compliance training. So things that actually had regulations associated with it, because we knew that that's what companies needed. And then over time, we layered on different types of learning that were more nice to have than must have.
So if a company has come to you and demand a specific kind of knowledge and you don't have it yet, how do you serve that demand?
This is what I love about what I get to do. The answer is we go out and find it for you, Guac. That's what we do, right? Our library has grown organically over time because we have customers coming to us and saying, I would like to see this training on this topic, or even better, this training on this topic from this provider. And what I get to do is I get to go to a provider and say, provider, did you know that I have 50 customers, 100 customers, 1,000 customers right now today who are asking for your content? Come join us. Yeah, let us expose your learning to what we do.
But do you get involved with the production and all kind of process of creating the content? Did you put your hands into that?
No, I mean, we aren't the experts when it comes to the subject matter, because I can't tell you what good best practice when it comes to learning Microsoft Excel versus leadership and sales training is, right? But what we can do is come back and actually share that data with the providers. Like, you know, we can tell you mobile is incredibly important. It's logical, but we can provide you the data on why you should be investing as a content creator into mobile. I can tell you what duration of learning is actually valuable and what duration of learning you'll be able to lose the interest of a learner on. So for us, we can provide that sort of macro data that helps inform our suppliers or the content providers about how to improve their content. But more importantly, we can also provide them with data on what's not working, which in the content creation space is just as important. Knowing what doesn't work is sometimes more valuable than knowing what does work.
You mean you're talking about the content and the knowledge? What doesn't work?
Yeah, well, even simple things like drop-off rates, right? What is the trend we're seeing as to why people are stopping a course 2 minutes into it? And how can we analyze that and provide that data back to providers? Because it's, you know, incentives are very much aligned. The more engagement there is with your content, the more engagement our learners have with our platform, which means the more likely we are to retain and grow really great customers. You know, we operate off this principle that retention and engagement power monetization and revenue. It's something that we got from, I think it was something called the Growth Reforge series back in the day. But that idea that if you retain your customers and have them really engaged, you inevitably end up in a situation where you're able to monetize and grow that.
Yeah. But so you are working with many different content provider, and I'm curious if how do you create like consistent quality for the whole platform? Because each content provider, they have different format and different quality and a different approach. So how do you provide like a consistent experience for your learners?
So there's probably two parts to that. The first part is that we cannot vet the content comprehensively because, again, we're not the experts on that area. But what we can do is look at the performance of that content to understand, is it at, I think about Uber drivers or DD drivers, right? Are they maintaining a certain rating for them to stay on our platform? That's the first part. Again, using data to be able to drive those decisions. The second part of it is understanding what the demand is for some of those providers. So as an example, I mentioned before how we go about acquiring providers. A lot of it is driven by our customers asking for them. We are able to vet the providers and their track records as a provider of content, just like you would vet a university or a high school to choose to send your children to. We do the same when it comes to vetting our providers before we provide them access to our customers and our platform.
So for the during the last, let's say, 8 years of Go One, right? What do you think is the most important factor that contributed to your success that helped you raise a lot of money so far?
I guess the first part of it is I really want to throw out there that raising money is not the goal. The goal for us is to be able to reach a billion people, not to be able to be worth $1 billion, right? If our mission, as I said, was to unlock positive potential through a love of learning, our vision is to reach a billion people globally. Mm-hmm. Right now, we reach probably about 30 million people. So we're 3% of the way there. Mm-hmm. We still have a long way to go. We have 97% of the journey still to go. But I think the key secret, or at least the key factor to our success to date, is always about great people. We have exceptional people who have come and worked with us, who still work with us, you know, from the team who in customer service all the way through to our sales team, throughout our engineers. I think culture is so important to the long-term success of an organization, and people are the key foundation of that. We talk about hiring people for cultural contribution, not cultural fit. How do you help grow my culture, not align with my culture? And that's something that I think has been very important with us from day one, from when we started.
Yeah, but are there similar model on the market right now on what Gowon is doing now?
There probably are. There are a lot of people who focus on content aggregation in the learning space or in the B2B space. I think the challenge that it comes back to is we're in the right place at the right time. I mean, I'll also come back to luck plays a massive role, right? The first bit of luck was actually the four of us as founders meeting each other in the first place. You know, the stars align, the four of us meet. That is incredibly lucky. The second part of it is that we built a pretty sizable online learning business just before COVID. Timing. 2020 onwards. Yeah. The transition, we knew that there would be a transition towards online learning over the course of 4 years. We didn't think that would happen in the course of 4 months, right? Mm-hmm. So I think a big part of what we experience is luck, right place at the right time, mm-hmm. with the right people.
Yeah.
And then you've got to run with it. When you get given that bit of luck, you need to make sure that you run with it and make the most of it.
But what helped you grow your learners so fast today?
So when we started out, we grew very slowly. And I think it's the typical sort of curve you see everyone. There's an inflection point that occurs. And often that inflection point for us that occurred initially was actually building out. We run off a sales-led model. Mm-hmm. So when we finally figured out how to build a sales team and how to scale it, I think that was the most important. Our acquisition of learners is by acquiring more customers, more companies. Mm-hmm. And the way we win companies is we go out and we sell to them. And so when we built a sales model that was scalable and sustainable, we could replicate that across Australia, into the United States, into Europe, and then throughout the rest of the world as well. So learning how to sell, I'll be very frank with you, is incredibly important.
Okay.
Being technically good isn't enough. You need to be able to sell, at least in our world and what we do.
So what role are you holding now between four of you? Are you on business?
So Chris and...
Yeah.
So as you probably be able to tell, I'm on the business development side. I deal with our customers.
Yeah. So you do sell, right?
I could not tell you the difference. I do sell. I could not tell you the difference between a line of code and a line of scripture. I do not know much about coding. What I do know a lot about, I feel, or what I enjoy doing, mm-hmm. is building relationships with our customers. That's what I really love doing. So I've always been on that sort of customer growth, the business development side of the business. Mm-hmm. Chris and Andrew are our co-CEOs. They drive the business.
Right.
They hold the strategic decision-making of the business. They have the hardest job in GoOne. Because if they make great decisions, we all share in the glory. If they make bad decisions, it all falls on them. So that's why for me, I have so much respect for my fellow co-founders, because Chris and Andrew have the hardest job in the company. And my job is to be there to support them in what they do. And Chris Hood heads up architecture in our engineering area. Right. He's of the four of us, he's the only one who actually has a background, mm-hmm. In software engineering and programming. It's kind of like a bad joke between the four of us. You have an economist, who is Andrew, a lawyer, who is Chris, an engineer who's the other Chris, and a doctor who is me. So a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, you know, and an economist get together to start an education technology company.
Wow.
So but we love what we get to do.
Now. So which part of the, like the sales or the business development or the technology, which part is the hardest part in this company?
Leadership. Yeah. Leadership. And I say that because if I want to be very critical of myself, I find managing and leading very difficult, because that transition from being a founder to being an operator is very hard. As a founder, I'm used to being able to do everything and anything. As an operator in operational roles, we have to learn to grow other people. Mm. And Gok, I don't know about you, but learning to grow other people is really hard.
It's always hard.
It's very challenging.
Yeah.
And, you know, leadership is something that I don't think we're in online learning. You know, I don't think it's something that purely learning can fix. Experience is very important.
Sure.
And so for us, we've had to bring on really great experienced people who I can learn from, who can teach me something, right? And that's what I really love. In if you think about the byproducts of the journey that we've been going done and go, you know, done in doing what we've done in Go One as founders, the ability to learn and to be able to develop these skills and learn from people you bring on the journey, it's probably the best part about doing it all. And I really do love it. I mean, that's why we're a learning company. So I think for me, you know, in that sales area, the area that I'm passionate about and I love, I find the ability to sell is quite easy and natural.
Really?
I think the ability to manage is really challenging. Yeah. And that's something that I'm learning today. I'm learning every single day, how do I become a better leader? How do I become a better manager as we continue to scale and grow?
Mm-hmm. And what have you learned the most from working with your customers?
That we should always listen to them. Right. So the reason why I say that to you is that very often we think we know better than the customer. I'm trying to be very honest with you here. When you sit down in a room with a product manager and engineers and you think about what the user journey should be like or what customers want, you're almost like a doctor trying to prescribe it to them.
You are a doctor.
Rather than just taking the time to listen and understand them, right?
Right.
And sometimes we forget that. And that's why the reason why I think I find leadership very challenging for myself personally is because I want to be there at the coalface in the front lines meeting with customers. And sometimes it's very hard to stand further back and try and be a general. I'd rather be someone, you know, Gok, give me a gun and let me stand at the front. Don't make me stand at the back, you know. And it's just really hard. So I think one of the biggest lessons, though, is still we always need to listen to our customers, right? They're ultimately, without customers, we don't have a business.
Well, that sounds simple, but it's not easy to get it done correctly, right? Listening.
And especially when you get bigger. When you get bigger,
yeah,
it's even harder. So that's where I think it's very important and not to be missed.
Sure. So you are the one who talk to the customer a lot. So what do they expect from you now? I mean, what seems to be the biggest challenge in matching the demand of the customer now?
I'll give you some broad topics. The first one is the changing workforce. So the fact that people are switching jobs on a more regular basis, which is great because that creates more work for us because you suddenly have more people being upskilled. But what that means is that you have people transitioning not just between departments within a company, but you have people transitioning between companies as well. The second part of it is things like remote working, right? The ability now to work from home 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week, or even 5 days a week suddenly means that how do we engage more with employees? And that's really hard, and that's what workforces are facing at the moment. And one challenge I think that is always going to be something that will always be present, particularly in countries like Vietnam and Australia, is as industries continue to change and emerge,
right,
we need to be able to match the skills with those industries changing. You know, ChatGPT came out this time last year.
Yeah.
Can you believe it's only been 12 months of ChatGPT?
Yeah, yeah, man, it's amazing. Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to say to you is that the only thing we can be certain of, Guac, is that the world will keep changing.
Right.
And that we need to keep learning to keep up with it.
Mm-hmm. What do the clients expect from like an online learning platform now? I mean, what are they keep asking for?
They keep asking for diversity.
Hmm.
It's really important, right? So you mentioned before, why don't the clients just go out and get 20 contracts with 20 different providers?
Hmm.
Because tomorrow they'll need 21, and the day after that they'll need 22,
need
and 23,
yeah.
and 24. They're going to need a lot, right? So the what clients are asking for is diversity of content. That's the first part. The second part, which you might find surprising, is the utilization of learning beyond just compliance and skills training related to your job.
Hmm.
What do I mean by that? Topics like mental health, topics like personal physical health, you know, those sorts of things, topics about managing interpersonal relationships, all of these sort of personal development topics
right.
are actually more powerful, important than before, because companies are starting to see online learning or learning within the workplace as a way for them to be able to address really important social issues. Mental health is a very popular one. And because of my background as a doctor, I will share with you that that is something that has probably been more powerful over the last 2 or 3 years and more impactful than probably a lot of the other learning subjects we have provided to our customers.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, definitely more diversity in terms of content, not just the technical skill, but also, you know, mental health and all kind of subject, especially after COVID.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you have 4 co-founders, and I'm just curious about how do you guys work with each other and create like a co-founder relationship that really contribute to the success of the company?
So I mentioned before, and you know, that luck has played a very important role in what we do. That luck is due to time, and part of that luck is us meeting each other when we did. And as a result of that, we've had a very long-term relationship to be able to build this company off the back of, right? If you think about, if you walk outside now into the city that you're in and you look for the tallest building, let's say it's 100 stories tall, what you don't see is that there's probably 50 stories underneath it that are holding that building up, right? And so for us as founders, our history of being successfully sticking together and growing is based on our history prior to what we've done today, prior to those last 8 years. So we've been able to work through a lot of the sort of challenges of how do we manage ourselves, how do we make decisions before there was actually anything that was of value at stake, right? The second part of it is we've learned to be very hierarchical. I said to you before that Chris and Andrew have the hardest job in GoOne as our co-CEOs. So as a result of that, we have an immense amount of respect for the decisions that they need to make. So when we're sitting down as a group, and if I say it's black and Andrew and Chris say it's white, I will tell Chris and Andrew why I think it's black. But when I leave that room, I'm going out to the whole company and I'm telling them it is white because my job is to be there to support them. I'll give them my counsel, but I'm there to support them. And that's how we all approach our problems because if we aren't united in how we make decisions, if we aren't clear on how we make decisions, then we slow down. And as a startup, speed is your biggest weapon.
Hmm. Why you say that?
Well, it is because incumbents, the people who are, you know, whoever you're up against, most of the time, everyone has good technology, but not everyone can move fast, right? If I think of Vietnam and Australia, the similarities that we have, our, you know, we are trying to prove ourselves as nations with great startups and great technical capability,
mm-hmm.
right? But we're trying to prove that at speed. We have to be faster. We have to keep moving faster.
Right.
You know, if you've read Elon Musk's biography or Steve Jobs's biography, it's not just been about innovation. It's been about speed.
Mm.
And we can't forget that.
Mm. I mean, co-founders' relationship is not always easy. How did you manage the relationship and what kind of key lesson have you learned from it? for managing a relationship with your co-founders?
So we have a rule that we are friends first and founders second. Very important. Friends first, founders second, right? So you can always come back when you're making a decision or you're having a discussion, a debate, or even an argument, that you have to remember that you are friends first, right? That's the first part. The second part that it comes back to is, you know, we spend a lot of time, especially in the last few years, working on our relationship and our time outside of GoOne. I catch up with Andrew. He's my best friend. We catch up 3 times a week. We have breakfast. We go to the gym. We hang out together. Mm-hmm. Chris Eglund literally lives around the corner from me, right? I've helped him install a washing machine into his house recently. Chris Hood, we go over to Chris's house, you know, once every few months, and we sit there and we play poker between the four of us so that Chris Hood can take all of our money, right? So between the four of us, we spend a lot of time trying to make sure that we build a strong relationship out of the boardroom, out of the meeting room, so that when we're in the meeting room, when we're having to perform, we've got that cohesion. Think of it like a sporting team. It's not just about the cohesion you have on the football field when you're playing soccer. It's right. about the cohesion that you build off the field that you bring on field with you.
Yep. So GoOne recently had raised a total of $400 million. Am I correct? With the recently...
And
the recently $100 million by AirTree Ventures and Five Sigma in mid-2022. So what do you think are the most critical actions that led to the success of the fundings, especially at a time when the funding markets seem to be constricted due to macroeconomic factors, as well as the cool down of the ag tech industry after a booming period before and during the pandemic?
So I'll share a bit of a secret with you and anyone else who's listening. Most investors who have invested in GoOne have said no to us previously, right? That's the first thing I want to share to any founder who is listening, is most investors actually said no to us. But what we did, and probably for very good reason, right? Probably for very good reason. But what we did was, when we first meet people, we say, this is who we are, this is what we do, and this is what we plan to do. This is what we're going to do in the next 12 months. This is what we're going to do in the next 18 months. This is what we get to do in the next 2 years. And when we keep that promise, the people who said no, the next time we talk to them, they said, oh, wow, you did what you said you would do, right? Maybe I am interested. And so, Kwok, I know it sounds very simple, but I think simply having the conversation, being polite and respectful, and doing what you say you will do goes a long way to building trust and having people want to back you with their money.
Right. So you recently acquired Blinkist, which is a famous German learning app. What was the reason behind that acquisition?
Multiple different reasons. I think some of the things that people aren't aware of is, you know, for us, it's the ability to be able to access a great, so Blinkist has amazing brand recognition and penetration globally. Not many people know who GoOne is. Many people know who Blinkist is, right? I'll meet someone and they say, oh, I've never heard of GoOne before. And I say, do you have Blinkist on your phone? And they say, yes. And I say, well, we now own Blinkist. And they go, oh, that's very cool, right? So, so the brand recognition and that penetration, I think people don't understand that tens of thousands of people sign up to Blinkist every single day.
Nice.
And most of those people are working professionals. Mm-hmm. And most of those working professionals are people whose businesses should and could be using GoOne. So that's the first part. The way we look at it is that we are acquiring a business that has exposure to tens of millions of our potential learners. That's the first part. The second part I will say to you is that, besides my co-founders, if there is anyone I could back to build a world-beating, amazing business in the next 20 years, it would be the founders of Blinkist, Toby and Holger.
Really? Right?
If you just meet these guys, you will sit there and you will say to them, whatever you do next, I want in.
Wow.
And those are the sort of people you want on your team. Right? They're the sort of people you want to work with. And so don't get me wrong, Blinkist is an amazing company that strategically is going to add so much to what we do in GoOne, right? We're going to be able to, it's going to help us reach a billion people globally. It's going to allow us to penetrate into markets and businesses with a brand recognition and an offering that will allow us to be able to push further into the US, further into Europe, and even further into Asia. Hmm. But Blinkist has amazing people. Mm-hmm. Toby and Holger are exceptional founders. I'm super excited that they've joined us and that I now count them as, there are six of us now that are founders in GoOne, because we have now Toby and Holger with us. And that for me is sort of, we can make 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 equal 50. Like that's the best part of it. You know, Toby and Holger are force multipliers. They're the two things that don't end up on your balance sheet post-acquisition, right, or on your valuation, that I don't think anyone has taken into account except for obviously us as a business. Mm-hmm. And we're incredibly lucky to be able to have Toby and Holger. And if you ever get a chance to meet them, you'll understand why.
Wow. And in terms of scaling GoOne for now, tell me about your greatest challenge of scaling this business. What's going to be the biggest challenge of scaling GoOne?
So I'll give you some internal sort of factors and external factors. The internal factors is us wanting to maintain that speed, right? And I mentioned that to you before, that speed is our greatest weapon. As a founder, I'm always worried that we are moving too slow, right? And that there's going to be no one who turns around and says to you, Vu, move faster. GoOne, move faster, right? That has to come from within. And if we slow down, if we lose momentum, if we lose speed, then we are at risk of decelerating, right? You lose momentum, you're decelerating, right? So that's the first part. So that internally, I think it's that velocity, that's product velocity, that's sales velocity, all those sorts of things. And that is always the biggest risk. And then you think of the factors that come into play when it comes to that. Growing too fast, biting off more than you can chew, all the typical things that startups will run into. But I will say as a broad topic, it's actually losing speed. Speed is something that we always have to remember is very important for us. Externally, I think it's about decision-making as to making sure, particularly, you know, Guak, you mentioned before, a capital-constrained environment. Potentially, we're seeing some regions slow down economically, some accelerate. We have to be really smart as to where we allocate our time, our capital, our resources. So as a result of that, sometimes less is more. What do I mean by less is more? Being smart about the regions that we target, the verticals we target, how we go about doing it. Because the world, that part of what we grew up in of growth at all costs, as you mentioned before, it's very different now. So we've always been smart with how we've done things. But I think we have to make sure that we adapt to what the new world looks like over the next 5 years. And, you know, 0% interest rates are probably not going to be part of the next 5 years.
Right. Is Vietnam and other Asian markets is on your target now? Are you kind of expanding?
If I have a say in it, the answer will be yes. But that is going to probably be the second tier for us. I mean, Europe and the US are our largest markets and where we've really focused. We now have, obviously, a base of operations in Berlin via Blinkist. We've always had a UK presence, so Europe has always been big for us. And the US obviously is a massive market for us because we're a B2B business. But for Asia, it would definitely make sense for us to make sure that Vietnam is on our list as for sort of that second level of approach for us. We have a small team that is growing out of Singapore who is charged of selling into Asia, into Vietnam, into India, into the rest of Southeast Asia. I personally am very, very excited about what a market like Vietnam offers to us. You know, I've seen firsthand the growth of business in Vietnam. And when you see a growing, thriving sector like the startup innovation and tech sector in Vietnam, you kind of really want to be part of it.
Yeah, it's your home country too.
That's right.
Yeah. How do you envision the future of online learning and what role do you see GoOne playing to shape that future?
So there are two questions that will come together. I see the future of online learning, and I think, you know, and I'm stealing this from Andrew because he's really thought long and hard about this. We see a future of learning where learning is beyond just courses, textbooks, audiobooks, these sorts of things, where learning is actually based on your experience and what you do, right? And so experiential learning is incredibly important, and being able to get credited with qualifications or recognition for what you do as part of your day-to-day job and having that occur sort of autonomously, and I'm speaking very pie in the sky at the moment, that's going to be really important because transferability of skills is going to be very important. Mm-hmm. Now, if that is what the future, I hope the future looks like, I hope GoOne plays in a role in adapting our business to be able to reach that. But there's a very big bridge we have to cross to be able to get to that point.
Sure. So on the journey of reaching 1 billion learners, you said before, what seemed to be the biggest challenge on that journey? And how do you plan to reach that?
The biggest challenge is just making sure we execute on the plan that we have. I see a pathway on how we do that. It's going to take work. It's going to take luck. I speak a lot about luck, but I very much believe in that. But a big part of it for us is making sure that we execute. We don't take our eyes off the prize. We don't take our eyes off our mission and vision. We don't get absorbed into, trying to build a great company. We get absorbed into trying to build a great product and servicing our customers well, which would then result in a great company being built, if that makes sense. So the greatest hurdle for us is execution. The opportunity, and it may sound very arrogant of me to say this, Clark, the opportunity for 1 billion users is right there in front of us. We just have to make sure that we execute on our plan. That's it. We have to execute. It's perfect execution, nice and simple. It's always going to be about, demand, right? Because if you go back to the principle that I shared with you before about don't forget the customer and the importance of the customer, if we can build up a really strong demand side, right, a really strong customer base, they will help us inform the supply side.
Right.
So as a doctor, I believe we should always think about the patient. As a company, we should always think about our customer. Hmm. As a distributor of learning, we should always think about the learner. And so we need to make sure that we aggregate the demand side appropriately and focus on that, which will then help inform our supply side. Because if it's driven by the supply side, the challenge you run into is that may not necessarily meet what demand wants.
Okay.
I know this is kind of marketplace discussion, but yeah. It's really important that is something we focus on.
Yeah, so focus on the demand side, I believe. So, right?
Definitely.
So you said you have a team of engineers in Vietnam, right? So I'm just curious about what is your take on the rising economy of Vietnam right now? And as a hub for engineer, for human resources, that you're looking for people to join your team, and how do you perceive Vietnam as a rising entrepreneurship hub in the future?
As someone who knows the country relatively well and who has been working with engineers and developers in the country for over a decade, I will tell you that it doesn't surprise me, but it does surprise me. Mm-hmm. The fact that Vietnam is thriving and absolutely is doing so well does not surprise me. What surprises me is the fact that other people are now finding out about it and we have to compete with them for great engineers and great talent, right? Yeah. But what's even better, and what I love this is what I love the most. 5-10 years ago, we used to have to compete with French companies and American companies for great engineers in Vietnam. Today, we're competing with Vietnamese companies for great engineers in Vietnam. And I love that because it tells me that the tech scene in Vietnam, the entrepreneurial spirit in Vietnam is growing. It's been awakened. It's thriving. Mm. And the fact that we are competing with local companies for local talent is something that I love because that did not exist or was not as strong 10 years ago.
Mm. How about the tech scene in Australia? Anything that we can learn from?
So Australia has quite a few challenges that are very unique to Australia, and I'll go to the differences before I go to the commonalities. One of the biggest differences is we're very far apart, right? So from where I am here in Brisbane to Melbourne, let's say it's 2,000 or 3,000 kilometres, right? Rock, from where you are, where's 2,000 or 3,000 kilometres get you?
That's a long way to go.
The Philippines or Indonesia or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So the reason why I say that to you is that Australia has some very unique challenges because we have a small population across a very large space, right? So that distribution means that we are able to capture opportunity in things like remote work and a lot of the changes that occurred post-COVID a lot better because it's helped accelerate a lot of the things that we get. We don't have as many neighbors as Vietnam has, right? So for us to go to Singapore, it'll take us about 8 hours. For you to get to Singapore, it'll take you 1.5. Mm-hmm. And that for me is the big difference. So for us, the tyranny of distance is one of the biggest challenges that we experience as a country that is very unique to Australia. It probably doesn't, you don't experience in Vietnam. The similarity though, is the fact that we are both emerging as countries as really strong players in the tech space, in the innovation space, in the startup space that I think people don't expect.
Right. Mm.
And that ability for us to be able to sort of fly on the radar and now come out with all these great companies, with all this great talent, and actually position ourselves in this sort of new world where technology is so incredibly important for this industrial revolution means that within each of our respective regions, we can play a really, really strong and positive role. And so I think the learning that Vietnam and Australia can have from each other is going, how do we make people think of our countries over the default countries people think about? People think about Silicon Valley in the US. They think about Singapore. They think about Shanghai. They need to be thinking about Vietnam and Australia in those same conversations. And I think we're both fighting for that same opportunity as well, which is great.
Yeah. So this podcast series is to celebrate the 50 years relationship between Australia and Vietnam. And I mean, do you see anything in the future in terms of like keep collaboration, any potential collaboration between Vietnam and Australia in terms of developing and creating a better startup or entrepreneurship scene between the two countries?
I think there are massive opportunities, right? The opportunities are huge because there's a few different things. One is that, and I want to go beyond software and look at things like advanced manufacturing and look at things like the ability to of industrial scale. What Vietnam can bring to the table is a highly skilled population of people who will have lots of know-how and lots of innovation. What Australia can bring to the table is experience, but also space and resources, right? So, you know, I truly do think that between Vietnam and Australia, if I had to come up with a slogan, it would be 1+1=3, right? What Vietnam brings to the table in terms of people, skills, and capability, and what Australia brings to the table in terms of experience and resources means that there are entire new industries that you will see develop, I think, over the next 10, 20 years that we wouldn't have imagined in the last 10 to 20 years. We have direct flights, you know, going from where I am in Brisbane to Vietnam now via new airlines. We have, you know, cars that are being released that are being built in Vietnam that are now being released here in Australia, right? So that's what I'm saying is that opportunity for collaboration is huge. Mm-hmm.
Do you plan to expand your team in Vietnam?
I hope so, right? That's a key focus. Two things. One, it gives us the, I honestly think it will happen twofold. The first part is that it makes sense to because it's an amazing, you know, if we can win the talent, we've got to make sure that we can get the great talent there as well, which there's tons of, but it's also being soaked up by other firms in Vietnam. But my biggest hope is that we can actually sell into Vietnam eventually so that people who suddenly want to come and work for us know that our brand is being used in country. Mm-hmm. Right. Go One doesn't have much of recognition inside of Vietnam because we don't sell into Vietnam.
Yeah.
I think once we sell into Vietnam, that will make a big difference.
The content on your platform now is mostly English speaking, right?
Yes, that's right. So we have plans to be able to diversify into multiple different languages.
Right.
But obviously most of our library right now is English, which is why selling to the US, selling to Europe has been very easy. Right.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But I think one of the best part of it for us is that our platform has been in Vietnamese since day one.
Oh, really?
Why has it been in Vietnamese? Because some of the people who helped build the platform are based in Vietnam. So that's what I'm saying is, you know, the first language outside of English that Go One was built off is Vietnamese. So that ability for us to be able to sell into Vietnam and cater for Vietnam, I don't think it's a matter of if, it's just a matter of when.
Yeah. So what do you think are some of the technological innovation that could impact your business?
So a lot of people, you know, when they looked at, you know, ChatGPT and language learning models, looked at the Blinkist acquisition and thought, how does that make sense? Surely that's a threat to what Blinkist does. You know, and I say to you, what do you think one of the biggest costs of building short audio summaries is? Labor when it comes to doing that, and being able to use technology to be able to create that makes a really big difference, right? So we do see AI as being a massive opportunity. It's a big area of investment. It's a big area where which will improve our product several fold on several fronts. One is the search and discovery, so using AI from a search and discovery point of view. But the second is also that idea of being able to do content creation that is very specific to your organization or your needs. And so suddenly it's not just curating content, it's also the creation of content as well. So, you know, I'm going to be very cliche and say, yeah, AI and the sort of what's happening in the sort of the language learning model space is going to be revolutionary in our industry, as it will be in probably every other industry as well.
Right. So what's the goal for 2024 for GoOne?
Keep doing what we did in 2023. Keep building, keep growing, being very smart with what we do, looking after our people, and making sure we stick to the plan and to the vision. I know it sounds very basic, but we've got a pathway to be able to get to where we want to be. We've just got to keep it simple and just keep doing what we plan to do.
All right. So 1 billion learners. Good luck with your journey.
Nothing too exciting. That's all we've got to do. Get to a billion learners.
I look forward to more Vietnamese language on your content, on your platform content later.
We're going to get there. We will get there.
Thank you so much, Anvo. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that's it for the story of Mr. Vũ Trần, the co-founder of GoOne. Thank you for tuning in, DG Frontiers. You can always listen to the conversation again on Spotify or Google and Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our channel, VidSuccess, on YouTube. And don't forget to click on the link below. We have a newsletter coming out every Thursday morning, so please subscribe. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.